Thank you for plugging into this Family Life News podcast, streaming issues-driven, family-focused news.
This is an uptick in the number of organizations that are contacting you. So what is going on?
Well, a lot. The last several weeks have been unlike any other, not just for certainly folks in your community there, but also for us at ADF. About a month ago, we saw in the state of Washington and the Pacific Northwest, and obviously in your neck of the woods as well, many communities starting to impose restrictions on the number of people meeting, you know, from 500 to 250 to 50, and that number kept dwindling. And in some instances, there are certain areas where they're trying to prohibit entirely. And so as that happened, we started to, at ADF, get dozens and dozens and, like you said, eventually hundreds of calls asking, can the church actually be restricted? Can the church be told that it must close its doors or think of other creative ways of worship?
And I know some of these pastors are getting really creative. There was one pastor in Pennsylvania who held a church service on the roof of the building, and people pulled up in their cars and maintained a 6-foot distance between each of the vehicles and then listened to him through their radios. Can you tell me some things you think might be violations that you're seeing? Are there some laws being broken here?
Well, absolutely. You just mentioned the creativity of the church. And, you know, one thing we really hadn't seen, at least I personally had not seen much of, is these drive-in churches. The idea that, okay, look, let's make sure that we're smart about this, that we social distance, that we don't have one-on-one immediate interaction, but how can we still worship in a way that's glorifying but also safe? Just this morning, we ended up having to file a lawsuit in the state of Mississippi, in Greenville, Mississippi, over this very issue where churches were told they couldn't do this, so they could go to a local drive-in restaurant and park their cars and sit there and eat a hamburger. But if they go to the church service, they would get ticketed and fined $500. And so we ended up having to go file a lawsuit, and we were thankful that the Attorney General of the United States, the Department of Justice, came in and filed a statement of interest, remarked on that case, and we're hopeful that'll end in a positive fashion. But that's one thing I want to emphasize to your listeners. It's been difficult, and absolutely where you guys are at, it's been very difficult. And it's been difficult for us on a daily basis to try to field all these number of phone calls. But not all are bad. We have heard countless stories of just how God is moving, how he's utilizing the creativity of these pastors and of churches that have banded together to figure out ways to still minister to the community.
Have you gotten any calls coming from churches or ministries in New York or Pennsylvania?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I think every state in the union has probably reached out to us. I mean, not everybody's been under the same restrictions. And in many instances, people don't have nearly the restrictions that other places have. And we have definitely heard from folks there. In fact, just within the last hour, we've heard from someone from New York.
Now we have restrictions that if you're over 2 years old, you have to wear a mask in public. Can you imagine holding down a 3-year-old and trying to get a mask on him to go out for the family walk?
Well, as the father of four, yes. I mean, that's, you know, one thing that needs to be addressed with a lot of these orders. On the one hand, I applaud, certainly we here at ADF applaud, any efforts to eradicate this horrible virus. And so we want to be smart about it. We want to applaud those proactive efforts. On the flip side, you know, even in times of national pandemic, we don't lose our First Amendment freedoms. We don't lose our fundamental freedoms. The Attorney General made that very clear just a couple days ago, remarking on the case that we filed. So we still have those freedoms. We just need to be smart about it. And I've heard a lot of crazy stories, seen a lot of crazy orders. I've even seen instances where people are being prohibited from singing in a live stream service because of the potential of the spread of the virus. And mind you, this is in a situation where you still have social distancing and hardly anybody in an empty room. So there are extreme examples here. There's also examples of orders where I think if the church is being treated fairly, or certainly no less than, say, a shopping mall or a bar or other retail establishment, if you're applying them equally and you're not singling out the church, as we saw in Mississippi with the case we filed, then certainly those restrictions for a limited amount of time are likely to be upheld by a court. But what we're gradually seeing more and more and more of are these orders, very draconian, that go beyond any sort of constitutional analysis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there with discrepancies. I was listening to two press conferences back to back, and one press conference was Andrew Cuomo in New York saying we're closing all non-essential businesses, and that includes ammunition stores. And then 20 minutes later, the governor of South Carolina gets on in his state in his press conference, and one reporter says, well, are you going to close the ammunition stores? And he looks directly at her and says, have you heard of the Second Amendment to the Constitution? You know, but it really is truly state by state, and that, and it's case by case. Even with churches, we're talking churches, nonprofits, ministries, there are discrepancies in how that law is playing out. I love how you compared it to bars and restaurants and things that are being allowed there but denied the church.
Right. Yeah, it's a jurisdiction by jurisdiction analysis that's made our daily work a little more difficult, you know, trying to stay up with the different states and let alone one state, the number of times that these orders are being amended. But beyond that, you also have most of the time in individual states, you have orders that are coming from individual counties or cities, and then you have disagreement between the city order and the state order and which one controls. It's unfortunate, too, the timing. Many of these we saw right before Easter. Whether it was purposely done or not, I mean, that's debatable depending on where you're at. But we had many instances where churches that were planning certain services had to make changes Saturday night, right before Easter. And so it's been very difficult for the church, but we're trying to assist them as they navigate these. And we're praying that we'll see the light here soon and things will get back to normal.
Harvard is saying that it might be 2022 before we're fully back to normal, before people can sit in a pew again, congregations of 500 or 20,000. As we sit here and we're watching cases hold steady for more than a week, and the president says we've already hit the apex, 2022, that doesn't seem to make much sense. So should churches stay online for 18 more months? And what about in states like Nevada, where less than 0.1% of the population got coronavirus?
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, there's not a one-size-fits-all remedy for this. What's taking place in Manhattan is not what's taking place in the middle of rural Montana.
Or even the middle of rural New York.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's absolutely right. And we've received calls from folks in those situations. And the idea that the church is going to be online for 2 years, 3 years, I mean, I find that unfathomable. What we'll see is hopefully a gradual pulling back of these restrictions. And, you know, maybe the next challenge will be if you have a state or a local jurisdiction that maybe is not as quick to pull those restrictions back, then what? Because when you look at it from a legal perspective, we always look to see, is the restriction that the state or the local government has put in place, is it narrowly tailored? Is it really put together in such a way that it is in place to accomplish its end goal? And what all that really means is, did you really need to do that much in restrictive measures to fix the problem, to keep the population healthy and safe? When you can go to a large retailer, when you can go through to a liquor store, when you can go to the casino and the doors of the church are closed, that presents major, major constitutional problems. And we are knee-deep at looking at some situations in the United States that are doing just that right now.
What markers should churches in New York and Pennsylvania watch out for is violations? At what point should they be seeking legal counsel and giving you a call?
Number one, I would say we have seen orders that local jurisdictions mainly have signed into law or passed that single out the church. So if you have a church order, meaning, you know, city council gets together and they issue an order, and it's a directive solely at the church, and they're not talking about anyone else, then that should raise flags, because targeting the church is a serious issue, and that's something that you should be concerned about, and that's something that obviously we at ADF would want to hear about. That happened in the state of Mississippi. That's what that lawsuit's really about. The second thing is I would look at the restrictions themselves, but also the exemptions. We talked about the retail establishments, the liquor stores. Are there certain retailing establishments that are open, but the church is closed? But if you're finding those exemptions, the ability for other organizations or businesses to remain open, but the church not, then, you know, that's also another red flag. You also look, too, at the duration of the order itself. You know, in the state of Virginia, the governor there, back at the end of March, unilaterally decided, and I don't know that he did so with any sort of hostile thought, but I had looked at that order that the state of Virginia issued, and it was for 70 days. How did the governor of Virginia know that his order at the time needed to go from, say, the end of March to June 10th? And so you need to look at the duration of it. You know, I think the smarter approach would be for these jurisdictions to be looking at these restrictions on a weekly basis, or at least a biweekly basis, some sort of smaller amount of time, because you can't just lock the door, so to speak, you know, for 30 days, for 60 days, for 90 days, and just say, well, I think this might happen, so we're just going to go ahead and do this, and then we'll just revisit it later on. No, that's not the way you should be looking at this.
Yeah, or 2022, right?
Well, yeah. Certainly, I can guarantee you, if you were to see an order like that, you'd see a revolt probably like you just saw in the state of Michigan when folks got out and started protesting what the governor there had instituted.
Mm-hmm.
I think the real battle is going to be when we've got certain states that are holding on to restrictions unnecessarily, and I think that's going to be the next round.